On Friday, I was helping my youngest daughter, Maddie, get ready for school. She's 10, and I was talking to her about the day and whether she was excited to go to school. Some days she is, some days she isn't. And this day she was, and she said, I'm excited to go. And I said, why? She said, I'm excited to see my friends. And I knew I was talking about friendship this morning, so I asked her, just out of curiosity, I said, what do you love about friends? What do you like so much about having friends? And she goes, well, I love my friends because they play with me and they're smart. And I said to her, wow, I wish I had smart friends. And and she said, you do, Pastor Jeremiah and Jared Berry. So I don't, big moment for those two. They should put that on their resume. I think friendship, we appreciate it, but I actually think it's a very underrated form of love. I think it's overlooked. I mean, just think about it. If I were to pull the room, what's your favorite romantic love song of all time? You would have, you know, there'd be dozens of different answers because there's so many amazing songs that have been written about romantic love. But if I pulled the room and said, what's your favorite song ever written about friendship? It's not as easy, right? If you grew up in the church culture like I did, you might think of Friends Are Friends Forever by Michael W. Smith, this iconic song about friendship. Or maybe from Toy Story, the song, You've Got a Friend in Me. Besides that, it's not something that we sing about. It's not something that we do a lot with. And yet friendship is so important. You know, friendship is especially an issue for men. I suppose that's probably not a surprise to any of you. The Survey Center of American Life recently released some data, and they said that in the last 30 years, the percentage of men who have six close friends or more have been cut in half. 30 years, it's gone from 55% of men saying they have six close friends or more to just 27% of men now saying. In fact, 15% of men reported having no close friends at all. The Surgeon General says this is actually a problem because lacking social connection and friendship increases the risk of premature death, according to the data, by more than 60%. And a 2021 report on men's mental health by the American Journal of Men's Health said that the suicide mortality rate of men is nearly four times the rate of women. For men, making and keeping friends might literally save their lives. And so friendship is a big deal. But how does friendship begin? And C.S. Lewis is very helpful on this in his book, The Four Loves. He says that friendship begins because you find someone else who loves the same thing that you love. In other words, he says, in the book, The Four Loves, he talks about the four different types of love. And the love, the word eros is like a romantic love. And he says in that form of love, two people stare face to face, and it's their fixed gaze on each other that keeps them in relationship, right? That's the romantic love. But friendship love is not that way. It should not be that way. Friendship love is not face to face, he says. Friendship love is shoulder to shoulder. And you stand shoulder to shoulder with your friend, and it's your fixed gaze on something outside of the both of you that keeps you close together. It's something you both love. 4 years ago, my family and I were in Disney, and we were walking around the Magic Kingdom, and from across the way, I see a guy wearing a Liverpool Football Club soccer jersey. Now, that's my favorite team. No, and I made a beeline for this guy simply because he was wearing the jersey. Immediately, I was like, this is a friend. This is a friend. Now, I knew nothing about him. He might have had totally different political views than me. It didn't matter in that moment. He might have had very different religious views than me. It didn't matter. He, God forbid, might eat his steak well done. It didn't matter in that moment. He was wearing a Liverpool Football Club jersey, and so I wanted to be his friend. And this is actually how friendship begins. Friendship, one of the worst, C.S. Lewis says, one of the worst ways you can go about making friends is just trying. He said, one of the hardest ways to make friends is if all you want is friends. What you actually have to do is live a full life and find interests, things that are interesting to you, and then you're going to find yourself shoulder to shoulder with other people who find the same thing same things interesting, and then all you have to do is be interested in them, right? It's a sales tactic, I guess. One of my friends who was in sales says, sales is not about being interesting, it's about being interested. You got to care about what the other person cares about. And this is how friendship often begins. Now, this morning, I want us to look at a book. It's kind of an obscure book in the Old Testament called Ecclesiastes. And it's part of the wisdom literature. And the wisdom literature in the Old Testament, like Proverbs and Ecclesiastes and Song of Solomon, they're given to us for two main reasons. Number one, to teach us biblical, or to teach us principles of life from God's perspective. But number two, it also teaches to fear God. Ecclesiastes is a very unusual, interesting book because most people believe it was written by a man named Solomon, who was the son of King David. King David, King Solomon. Solomon was known as the wisest man to ever live and the wealthiest man to ever live, yet he made many foolish decisions in his life. And this book is supposedly written towards the end of his life as he kind of looks back at all of the things that he thought mattered, and he realizes that so many of them left him empty. In fact, one of the key phrases in the book of Ecclesiastes is vanity of vanities, which simply means it just sort of slips away, so much of life, wealth and pleasure and work and accomplishment. And so it's an interesting book because he gives us the perspective of someone who had it all and has seen it all, but learned in the end what matters most. Ecclesiastes chapter 4, verse 9, he says, "Two people are better off than one, for they can help each other succeed. If one person falls, the other one can reach out and help. But someone who falls alone is in real trouble. Likewise, two people lying close together can keep each other warm. But how can one be warm alone? A person standing alone can be attacked and defeated, but two can stand back to back and conquer. Three are even better, for a triple braided cord is not easily broken." What I want us to learn from this passage this morning is that there are four places that gospel friendship should show up. Four places that friendship, gospel friendship, should show up. And the first thing is this: true friendship, gospel friendship, shows up in your mess. Shows up in your mess. He said, if one person falls, the other can reach out and help, but someone who falls alone is in real trouble. Listen, friends, we find ourselves in messes all the time in life. Maybe it's a mess that you created, or maybe it's a mess that was created for you. But either way, if you walk through the mess alone, you're in real trouble, in real trouble. And true friends find us in our mess. They know where we're at. They know where we are at. Recently, my family added this app to our phones. My wife, myself, our 16-year-old, and our 13-year-old added this app called Life 360. Familiar with it? And Life 360 is like a stalking app, right? So it's like everybody knows where you are all the time. And I was okay with it because I want to know where my girls are. I want to know when they get to work and when they get to school and when they leave school, when they arrive home. It gives me a sense of comfort to know where they are. But then I found out it gives driving reports. Do you know that? It gives a weekly driving report on how fast you drive. And it keeps track of how many times you stop quickly and how many times you speed up quickly. And all of a sudden I was like, what, do we need this app? I mean, like, do we trust God or not? Like, do we trust him? What's so wonderful about that app is that I never feel like I couldn't get to one of my girls or know where they are if I needed to get to them. And friends know how to get to you in the best of ways. Friends know how to find you in your mess. And friendship develops the proximity that you need for when you go through the mess. They're there with you. I want to take the opportunity to thank our church family who's walked with our family these last 2 weeks through our own mess, our own difficulties, our own sorrow. If you're not aware, my mother passed away two Thursdays ago, and last Wednesday we had her services here at the church. And I just can't tell you how grateful we are for the way in which you've cared for us. Super meaningful. As you know, if you've gone through grief like this, everything's a blur. So if we don't thank you for something, just know we're grateful. But the text messages, the emails, the cards, the gift cards, the kindness of your presence for those that are able to be here, the food. Oh my goodness, the food. I mean, so much food. I got my own episode of Man versus Food going on in my house right now because we have so much. We're so loved. And here's a popular saying: friendship multiplies your joys and divides your griefs. Friendship multiplies your joys and it divides your griefs. And I find that to be true. And every time someone would send me something, whether it was a quick text or just checking in, just want you to know I love you, thinking of you, praying for you, it had a way of the grief, of course, is here, but it had a way of making me remember I'm not alone. People see me in the mess. And they love me in this mess, and they're with me in this mess. Friends walk with people through the worst moments of their lives, and I'm grateful for that. And I think you probably are as well when you need that. But here's what I've learned about friendship. Once you're in the mess, it's actually kind of too late to develop the friendships. You need to develop the friendships now so that when you find yourself in the mess, they're already in your life. They're already a part of your life. You might think, what do I need friends for? And I would just say, something's coming someday, and you're going to need a friend. And that's what friends do. They show up in your mess. I can't help, as I was thinking about this, I couldn't help all week but to think about Jesus in the garden before he was arrested. And I'm struck by his desire to not be alone. He just didn't want to be alone. I mean, he knew Peter, James, and John were going to fall asleep. That didn't surprise him. But he still said, just come with me. Just be near me. Just be with me. And if Jesus needed friends, then how much more do you and I need friends? I saw a meme online that said, one of Jesus' greatest miracles that no one talks about is having 12 close friends in his 30s. Yet Jesus surrounded himself in meaningful ways with people, and we must as well, in your mess. The second way that the gospel friendship shows up is in your face. It said in verse 9 that two people are better off than one because they can help each other succeed. Now, helping each other succeed requires us to get in each other's faces in two ways. Number one, we have to get in each other's face to cheer each other on, to cheer each other on, to encourage. If I were to ask the room, who in this room you on a regular basis receive too much encouragement? Too much encouragement. You're way over encouraged. You're filled up. In fact, you just are sick of being encouraged. None of us. Right? There's so many things discouraging us around us and within us. And here's what friends do. They get in your face and they cheer you on. And they encourage you. I love the imagery of like two athletes on the same team celebrating a goal and the way that they get face to face and they just scream at each other. And it's just their way of saying, yeah, let's do this. And we need that. I don't know about you, but I need that. I need that sort of encouragement. I need people to do that who are willing to get in my face and cheer me on. One of the most helpful marriage principles I was ever taught, and we will talk about marriage at some point during this series, is just the simple idea that if you think something good, say it out loud. If you think something good about your spouse, say it out loud. Don't let it die in your head. It can't read your mind. So if you notice them doing something and you think to yourself, man, I'm so glad they do that, say it out loud. Speak it to them. Encourage them. We need to encourage one another. Now, this whole idea of cheering each other on, the one thing that keeps us from doing it is if we see each other as competition. It's actually really hard to root for people when they're our competition, isn't it? And so when we see friends who get promotions at work or good things happen to them in life, if there's anything in our hearts where we think we are competing with them for status and significance and value and worth, even though we probably would be we would follow proper etiquette and congratulate them and say, I'm happy for you. In our hearts, we might be thinking, I wish that was me. I've actually worked harder than them. I've sacrificed more than them. When we see people as our competition, when we compete with each other, we will not cheer for people the way that we should. We will not rejoice with people when they rejoice the way that we should. But here's how the gospel helps us with this. The gospel of Jesus Christ gives you significance apart from anything that you do, so that you don't need to draw your significance from having more of things than other people or being further along than other people. The gospel establishes your value and worth because the heart of the gospel says this, that God thought you were worth the life of his son. It's the price that was paid for you. So you have this value and worth that is stamped on you so that you no longer have to run around trying to get your value and worth from another promotion, another raise, another experience, another whatever it is. And when we have that at work in our hearts, it actually frees us to cheer each other on. The second thing that we do is we don't just get in each other's faces to cheer each other on. Sometimes we have to get into each other's faces to call each other out. Good friends know how to call each other out. This is actually where most friendships fail. Because most people love the friendship more than they love the friend. Does that make sense? They value the friendship more than they value the friend. So they won't tell the friend the truth because it might put at risk the friendship. And this is how we fail each other. Listen, if you find people in your life that are willing to risk the relationship that they have with you to tell you the truth in a loving way, you got to hold on to those people. There's not many of them like that. And you also have to invite people in that way to be able to speak the truth to you and then respond in a way that makes them know it's safe to speak the truth to me, to get in your face. You know, this is, you know, in losing my mom, I've lost many things, but one of the things I've lost is, you know, moms will get in your face, right? A mom will get in your face, and my mom was no exception to the rule. And I already feel the loss of that, you know? And by the way, I'm not looking for volunteers of people to get in my face, but I sense within my own heart I need to empower people in my life to get in my face because my mom won't be able to do that anymore in the same way. And so we need to be able to get in each other's face. Now, we will not cheer each other on if we compete with each other, but we will not call each other out if we believe that we complete each other. So if we think that I need this person to have meaning, value, and worth, then you'll never risk the relationship to tell them the truth. But the gospel helps us with this as well, because the gospel doesn't just give us significance, which allows us to cheer for people. It gives us security in knowing who we are in Christ, which allows us to be honest with each other and to speak the truth. By the way, this is not license to be a jerk. This is an invitation to speak the truth in love. Say, I love you. This is what I see. And because I'm your friend, I want to say this to you. We need those people. Friendship shows up in our face. Third, friendship shows up in your home. Verse 11, this one probably jumped out at you when I was reading it. Likewise, two people lying close together can keep each other warm. But how can one be warm alone? Now, at a first read, I'm not interested in this, because I don't like to be warm when I sleep. In fact, it's my least favorite thing. I got a Costco-sized fan by my bed, because I don't want to be warm when I sleep. We have a king-sized bed because Aaron and I want to sleep in our own zip codes. Like, we don't want to be near each other. When I watch movies and see couples falling asleep, cuddling together, I do a little throw-up in my mouth. Because first off, I think, no one actually does that, right? No one does that. Can we agree? No one does that. But also, I just think, aren't they so warm? They look so warm. They look warm. And I don't like to sleep when I'm warm. Of course, that's not what Solomon is talking about here. But what Solomon is saying is this. To lie even back to back with someone and fall asleep, it is a level of vulnerability that's significant. You're never more vulnerable than when you're asleep. So this speaks of tremendous trust that I would lie with this person back to back, make myself vulnerable to them, but also the intimacy of sleeping that close together is significant. And I don't want to make too much of it, but here's what I think. I think real friendship means we're in each other's lives, like really in each other's lives, like in each other's homes, knowing each other. Real gospel friendship, Sunday mornings, what we're doing right now, it's a catalyst for it, but it can't sustain it. This isn't enough. You guys know that, right? The hey, good to see you. Hope you had a great week. Why do you have 5 donuts? You know, those sort of comments, like, that is not enough to sustain a friendship. It can start a friendship, but it can't sustain it. We got to be in each other's lives beyond Sundays. We really do. If you want to be built in and a part, so we talk a lot at Trinity about moving from friendliness to friendship. We've always been a friendly church. That's part of my mom and dad's legacy. They created a culture of friendliness. Hopefully, anyone who ever walks in here recognizes that. They go, those people are friendly. They talk to me. They greet me. They make me feel welcome. They make me feel at home. That's wonderful. And I pray we never lose that as a church. But we also have to move from friendliness to friendship. Because friendliness actually doesn't cost us a lot. It costs us a smile. It costs us a moment. It costs us a conversation. But friendship means, hey, let's get together. I want to invite you into my home. And actually, in the New Testament, when the Apostle Paul is giving two young pastors, Timothy and Titus, a list of qualifications for church pastors and elders, in there is opening up their homes to people and the gift of hospitality. Now, it's culturally, we're quite different, so I'm not trying to make a rule out of that. And I realize that logistically, for some of you, opening up your home because of where you live or whatever, it may not make the most sense, but you can meet people at a coffee shop. You can meet them at a restaurant. You can meet them at a park. You can go to the beach. And so my encouragement to us, if we're going to be the people that God calls us to be at Trinity, we got to move from just 2-second conversations with each other on Sundays to, hey, let's connect sometime. Let's be in each other's lives, in each other's home. To that end, quick announcement, dinner parties are back. And if you're new to Trinity, a dinner party is exactly what it sounds like. I promise you it's not a trick. You're not going to show up and then all of a sudden we're going to ask for money. You're not going to show up and all of a sudden someone's going to start to lead a Bible study. You're not going to show up and someone's going to grab their guitar and start making everybody sing songs. It's none of that. It is literally a dinner party. I promise you that. And on April 28th and May 5th, there are 11 homes that are opening up the doors of their homes to you. And the idea is that you sign up for one of the 11 and you go to a dinner party and you meet people and you bring a dish, and every dinner party has its own theme. Now, we didn't think about the fact that May 5th is Cinco de Mayo, so I think every single one of those is a Mexican theme, and I hope that'll be okay. Here's what I'm most excited about. By the way, sign-ups are live. Sign up through the church website. There's a big button on the homepage, dinner parties. Click on it. Click on the name of the home you want to go to and sign up. And do it soon because they fill up. Here's what I'm most excited about this time around. Out of the 11 host homes, 5 are first-time hosts. I love that. 5 people new to our church are like, I'm family. I'm going to open up my home. And so I want to encourage all of you today, this week, get online, sign up. Starting next Sunday, we'll have laptops in the lobby. If you need, if you're technologically challenged and you need help, we're going to help you get signed up for the dinner party that you want to go to. Let's get in each other's homes. I want to close. I'm going to ask Pastor Anthony to come up and join me. So gospel friendship, it shows up in our mess. It shows up in our faces. It shows up in our homes. But lastly, it shows up in our hearts, in our hearts. Verse 12 says, a person standing alone can be attacked and defeated, but 2 can stand back to back and conquer. And look at this phrase. 3 are even better, for a triple braided cord is not easily broken. This is a phrase that's used a lot at weddings. Maybe you've heard this at a wedding before. My mom used to love to make, actually, for the bride and the groom, these triple braided cords, pink and blue and white, and she'd braid them together and give it to them as a reminder that you two and Jesus cannot easily be broken. And that is a powerful truth, but that's actually not, Solomon's not being specific to marriage here, is he? He's just talking about friendship and life. And we talk a lot about Jesus in the center of our marriages, Jesus in the center of our homes, but it's also Jesus in the center of our friendships. Jesus actually wants to be Lord over our friendships as well and be present when we're with our friendships. And we think about how Jesus at work in our hearts, how it helps us befriend people who are different than us, befriend people who test us and tire us out, befriend people who disappoint us, befriend people who we otherwise wouldn't befriend if it wasn't for Jesus at work in our hearts. Jesus gives us the motivation. He gives us the example and the motivation. First off, Jesus, as our example, he was known as, people that didn't like Jesus gave him the title Friend of Sinners. And they said it in a negative light. Look at this dude. He's a friend of sinners. What kind of person, what kind of rabbi, what kind of holy person is a friend of sinners? And yet Jesus ate with the prostitutes and the tax collectors. And he spent time with people who the rest of society looked down their nose at. Why? Because he also was coming for you and me. And if we think we're any better than those people, we don't understand our need for Jesus. Jesus being a friend of sinners is really good news for you and really good news for me because we're sinners. And he offers his friendship. And lastly, I want you to think about this. We talked about how friendship shows up in your mess, in your face, in your home, and in your heart. Well, think about Jesus, our friend. Does Jesus show up in our mess? He does. He walks right into our mess. Instead of judging us and condemning us and attacking us and belittling us and giving us a huge list of things that we need to start doing to work ourselves out of our mess, he embraces us. And he extends to us his grace and his mercy and the gift of his friendship. Jesus walks into our mess. He gets in our face sometimes too, doesn't he? To cheer us on. The Holy Spirit is the encourager. Jesus gets in our face through his word, confronts us with our truth, his truth. He gets into our homes. In fact, John chapter 1, verse 14 says that Jesus left heaven and he came and he became flesh and he lived amongst us. He dwelt amongst us. The Message translation says that Jesus moved into the neighborhood. He's right in our homes. And then Jesus, of course, at work in our hearts. He wants us to invite him in, to have fellowship with him. He's the friend closer than a brother. He's the friend who never leaves us. He's the friend who never forsakes us. And listen, friends, because you have that kind of friend in Jesus, you can be friends to all kinds of people. Let's pray together this morning.